All right, guys, for today's episode, I'm real excited. I've got my man, Rick Del Santro. Rick is the CEO of Metabolic. He is also the CEO and co-founder of Z-Growth. Z-Growth is a franchise accelerator in which they go out into the marketplace looking for various franchise options that they believe are exciting, that are poised for growth, and they bring their franchising expertise into that company for an exchange of equity, and they grow that franchise. In 2019, Metabolic was only owned by Brandon Cullen and Kirk DeWally, the two co-founders. They partnered up with Z-Growth, and then I think they had 11 franchises in 10 states at that point. And they partnered with Z-Growth. Rick came in and stepped in as the CEO, and they exploded the growth of Metabolic. Metabolic has over 100 signed franchises with, I believe, 34 or so officially open, and the rest are in some stage of commercial real estate development. They obviously have done wonders for the Metabolic franchise. You guys have heard me talk a lot about, and they've done a ton of work with other franchises as well. So I asked Rick to come on and talk a little bit about what they look for in a concept that they're going to franchise, his background, and just this entire idea of owning a franchise accelerator. Hope you guys enjoy the episode.
What is up, guys? It is Stu, and it is another episode of the What the Fuck Gym Talk podcast, and I've got my man, Rick Del Santro, the CEO of Metabolic. And are you founder or co-founder of Z-Growth?
Well, I'm one of the co-founders and the CEO of Z-Growth as well.
Noted. Okay.
Great.
So CEO Rick, this is where your superpowers lie. Do me a favor. I'm just selfishly interested in all this. How does one get into creating kind of an accelerator for franchises? How did you arrive in the Z-Growth world?
Yeah, it's actually a really interesting roadmap to get there. But I've been around franchising for the better part of my business career. Started out in real estate franchising with a company called HFS, who owned Century 21, Coldwell Banker, ERA, Better Homes and Gardens, Sotheby's, started there. I started actually at Century 21, and then we were acquired by HFS. And then, you know, we said, hey, we're going to go out and acquire other real estate companies. So we have to build this whole umbrella organization. And so I went out and I did that. And it was my first really, opportunity to be a part of franchising, and I fell in love with it because, you're just dealing with entrepreneurs all the time, and it energizes me to do that. Frustrates me from time to time as well, as you can imagine, but I love dealing with people that are entrepreneurs and want to go out and do their own thing. So that really was how it all started. I sort of took a sabbatical from that after a bit, but my business partner at Z-Growth, Javier Paraga, reached out to me in 2008 with an idea of, oh my God, well, how in the world would you be interested at all in an opportunity to launch a franchise business here in the U.S.? And I said, oh, I don't know, but what is it? And he said, it's called Zippy Shell, and it's in portable storage and moving. And I'm like, you mean like pods, that type of thing? I'm like, God, dude, come on, really? And I said, oh, man, I can't think of anything more boring than that, you know? And anyway, he kept dripping on me for a number of months. And then finally I said, what is it, you know, what is it that you want? Like, how do I get you off my back? He said, well, I just want you to go to California, and the two guys that are bringing the concept, you know, and looking for somebody to launch it in the U.S., two Australian guys are going to be out there, and I want you to meet them and talk to them. And he said, if you don't like what they have to say, then, you know, I won't bring it up again. Those two guys, one was named Gareth Taylor, and the other was named Adam Gilchrist. And that is the very same Adam Gilchrist from F45. So I went out there and I looked at it, and I actually really did like the idea, the concept. So we launched in the U.S. about a year later, we were the franchisor, and we had to build something from absolutely nothing. The whole idea of Zippy Shell was that our containers were going to be in these trailers. That was the shell. And these containers would go into the trailer, and that trailer would have access to a lot more places than you could just drop a pod container. And it would give you a lot more flexibility. And so we'd deliver them out to your house. You'd load your stuff in them, and we'd pull them away. And it's not sitting in your neighborhood where you're, you know, neighbors were all complaining and, hey, how long is that thing going to be sitting out on your front lawn type of thing. And so we went out and started franchising it. And I did that from 2010, probably through 2018 when I left. And we went through a couple of rounds of private equity funding. And I think our first round was $25 million in 15. And then there was a private equity round in June of 18, which was about 100, and I want to say maybe 120 million of equity and 60 million of debt. And that came along with the acquisition of a company called 1-800-PACK-RAT. And sort of brought those worlds together. And up until then, we were a franchise business. And then at that point in time, well, there still are our franchisees. They stopped franchising and focused more on expanding the corporate footprint. And then the business does incredibly well today. But Javier left in 2015 because he didn't have an operational role. And he went out and he said, hey, I've got this idea. It was like a year or two later, to go out and help franchisees with their franchise sales efforts. And that was the original birthing of Z Growth. And then when I left in 2018 and joined him, I said, look, I think we have to transform this idea a little bit. If we weren't going to take a significant interest in the entities that we believed in, then I didn't think we'd have the ability to control the success or to really steer towards success. If we were just going to sell franchises and be very minority owners, I think it would have allowed for operations to get screwed up and us to have no real input in. So that's how it all sort of came together. And it was sometime in late 2018 that I said, yeah, let's go ahead and let's do this. And then really spent the balance of that year and early 19 working on just raising capital for the fund and then going out and looking at concepts.
How much did you guys raise for Z Growth?
We didn't raise a ton. And it was interesting. Our initial offering docs were to raise $25 million. And as we sat down and started thinking about what we wanted to do, and I'll explain how I think we're different, we realized that we'd never would spend that money. And here's why. Having dealt with private equity in the past, what you get are a lot of really smart guys that can put the best Excel spreadsheets together you've ever seen. And they check in with you on a quarterly basis and say, hey, how are things going? What I was hoping for as an entrepreneur was somebody that would come in and say, hey, let me show you how we can do this better. Let me show you how we can accelerate growth. Let me show you how. And I didn't get that. And so what we said we would do is we'd get very, very involved with the brands, and we would actually drop Z Growth people into the brands until the brands got to a maturity level where they hired their own staff. So think about it as though we're, in essence, fractionalizing roles across multiple concepts so that, hey, we need a head of marketing, but gosh, we can't afford to pay, $120,000 for a head of marketing when we have, eight franchisees. The economics don't make sense, right? So how do you get that role into an organization at a few thousand dollars a month, right? And so that was kind of the idea. So we were going to be really, really involved, are really involved on all aspects of the business. And so when you do that, we just don't have the bandwidth to own 10 or 15 businesses in our portfolio. So we said we were going to probably max out at, probably five concepts. And so, you know, how much money do we really need to raise? And then we could always raise later. So initially, I think we raised around $10 million for the Z Growth Fund.
And so you guys are, so then you'd be more of a boutique franchise accelerator, franchise advisement and growth company. Let's talk about that portfolio. What is currently in the portfolio today?
Yeah, so we obviously the relationship that we have is we made through Metabolic, which obviously is in boutique fitness, strength training. We have another boutique fitness concept, and that is called Jabs Boxing, which is more on the HIIT side of boutique fitness. It does incorporate strength training, plyometrics, but you know, it's a boxing inspired workout. You're not getting in there and hitting each other, but you are hitting the bags, a number of different bags pretty regularly. We have a breakfast, lunch, brunch concept called Daily Jam, which I absolutely love. Just opened another location in Farmington Hills, Michigan. But the food is phenomenal. And if you think of, you know, most places people go to get breakfast today, it's usually a restaurant that just says, hey, I've got the building, why not serve breakfast? Or it's a, you know, a hotel that says, yeah, we have to serve breakfast. But this is a concept that focuses.
Is this more like a snooze?
It is, yeah.
Brunch?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it's open from 7 to 3, and it's great because the entrepreneur gets to be home for dinner every night. It's not your, you know, chaotic, oh, I've got to be, you know, up until 2 a.m. and then back there the next day. So
it's so funny. I was talking with someone about snooze. I was there with my kid. He's like, man, I just don't understand how a place that only does brunch and is only open during those hours makes money. I'm like, the fuck do you think a bar is? It's the same thing, different side of the day. It's the same thing. It's only open from 5 to 2 a.m. Like,
yeah. Well, you know, the other thing too is if, as you think about breakfast foods, and obviously the world's changed in the last couple of years, everything's gone up because of inflation, but you're generally not dealing with really expensive, you know, ingredients, you know, a lot of flour, bread, and eggs and things like that. But there is that opportunity, and you're pushing a lot of people through in a, like you said, in a short period of time, condensed period of time. And they make money. They're good investments. So anyway, and then we have another concept, which is interesting. It started out, originally it was called Comfort Depot, and it was in the HVAC space. And, the idea was we have this patented technology that allows us to, accurately size an HVAC unit, heating or air, for your home. So you as a consumer, if you want to just, you know, something's going or it went, you wake up and your heat's gone, you could literally go online in less than 3 minutes. We will be able to quote you what an HVAC replacement unit would cost installed. And we give you three different options, a good, a better, and a best, right? They're all going to work. And then you can choose basically according to, you know, whatever that price point is that you want to hit and you want to live within. So that was going to be the backbone of this franchise concept. And frankly, you know, working and dealing with HVAC providers for a bit, I realized how big a lift that was going to be. And so we said, okay, scrap that. Let's put this together as a SaaS business. And let's just license this platform to the HVAC companies, because one of the things we learned right away was the average HVAC company is going to close like 1 out of 5 people they go out and give a quote to. And with this, if you come through our system, we're going to close 6 out of 10, right? So close rates are much higher. Think about it. I mean, the typical process today is if you need to replace your heat or air, you're going to call 2 or 3 different companies.
Oh, God, yeah.
You're going to wait. They're going to come out, spend a couple hours. They're going to try to sell you on something. You have no idea what you're buying. You have no idea if it's a good price. You want to get the next guy in to quote you the price. So this just takes all that away, and it finally gives some transparency to the consumer. And so we've got that concept.
We'll get back to the podcast in just a second, but if you've ever considered opening up a metabolic franchise, go ahead and head over to my Instagram, grab the link in bio there, grab the link in the show notes of this episode, and fill out that form letting me know that you're interested. You and me will hop on a call, and I'll answer any questions I can for you. How much does it cost to get started with them from a franchise fee perspective? What are they seeing as far as build-out costs? What are the royalty fees and all the other ins and outs of starting a metabolic franchise? I will then put you in contact with the actual franchise team over at Metabolic Corporate so you can take a deeper dive and see if this opportunity is right for you. Back to the episode.
We also have a couple other things that we're looking at. We got very close with a Pilates concept at one point. We've got a couple of things in our pipeline right now. So we've got four active. We do have room for one more. We're constantly looking at things. People are constantly bringing us things to look at. But we have to be very, very particular about the industries and the people, obviously the founders, and where we think the opportunities lie.
You like to hedge your, and you guys have obviously stuck to your rule of five, essentially, for the most part.
Yeah.
And do you worry about getting overloaded with fitness?
I don't. I'm a big believer in the boutique side of fitness, which does not mean I don't think the big box Globos, they're not going anywhere. But I do believe that we're going to see a lot of growth. And I think if you choose your concept wisely, it can be very, very lucrative and successful. I'm cautious about really narrowing your niche, right? I've looked at a lot of cycle opportunities, and to me, it doesn't work for me. I just think it's your audience is very narrow. Rowing concepts, climbing concepts. I just think your audience has got to be too specific for those. So we want to do things that we know the audience is large enough for. And then if we can do them better than somebody else, then I think we're successful. I love the industry. I love the business model. I love the, whether you call it culture or community that's created at Boutique Fitness, that is really, really an important element. Now, ask me why it's an important element. I will tell you because people tend to stay longer, right? And you're a membership-based business. And if there is that tie to it, I worked out at Equinox for probably 12 years, 13 years. I can tell you I never made a friend. I mean, there were people I knew. I'd see them on the streets of D.C., but...
But you stayed for 12 or 13 years. I'd say the retention's pretty damn good.
Yeah, no, the retention was good. I was your typical guy. First of all, there wasn't much boutique when I started, right? And I've always, I know what I'm doing. I don't need somebody to show me. And it was funny because when I first started going to Metabolic, I realized, oh my God, I've cheated myself for the last 12 years, it's so easy to half-ass it when you're not, you're not feeling it, you're there, or, it's fun. I tell these people this story, I would literally get my Men's Health magazine, look for the new workout because my old one was getting stale. I mean, that was my life, right? But, it is very different. So it's the community, and then it's just, no one's going to argue that we haven't evolved and continue to evolve as an overall wellness society. And what does that really mean? It means that we give a crap today about what we put in our bodies and how we take care of our bodies, right? And people started working out at much younger ages and they stay working out much later in life. And so I look at it and I say to myself, wow, when my parents were my age, right? They never said, hey, I'm headed to the gym or I'm going for a run. I mean, if they took a walk around the cul-de-sac, it was like a major life event, right? I mean, it was just, and now I had a son at 16 who started out at Boutique Fitness, and I've met people in their 60s and 70s working out, like earnestly working out, like really working out. And so it's just a changing lifestyle. And even to today, if you look at the youngest of the generation out there, how they prioritize wellness over almost anything. They'd rather give up a night out drinking, which I know you and I find that hard to believe, but they'd rather give up a night out drinking to keep their fitness membership or memberships, right? Many of them had multiple memberships. So
yeah.
Anyway.
So let's, can you share what concepts, you know, I don't mean disparaging against any former portfolio concepts, but like what concepts have you guys had in the past that didn't work out? Because, you know, me and Brandon and I got together on that podcast that I did on his.
Yeah.
And we talked about like the realities of franchising is it is very much, I mean, it is victim to the same casualty and the cruelties of being a small business owner. And it's not a guarantee. So what franchise models have been in the Z Growth portfolio that just didn't work out?
Well, I would say, look, Jabs Boxing has been an amazingly heavy lift for us. And let me tell you why. When we got involved in that concept, it was called Jabs Boxing Fitness for Women. And the whole idea behind it was this was going to be a safe space for women to come and work out, feel empowered, where there weren't going to be guys in the room. And they would have, you know, kind of this workout area and these classes to themselves. And what I liked about Jabs when I first saw it was I liked the fact that the workout was all encompassing, meaning not only were you hitting bags, but yeah, there was a cardio aspect to it, but there was strength training. There was this, you know, movement toward plyometrics. And so it was a full workout. And, you know, we got involved with that around 2019, I think. And we spent the first year really listening, learning, and observing. And we went to the two co-founders and we said, we think we need to make some significant changes if this is going to work. And they said, well, what do you want to change? I said, well, one, we think we need to get rid of this being women's only. Okay. And they said, why? And they said, well, there's some business reasons. One was not. So a young lady and a gentleman. And obviously, look, having been a founder of a franchise business, I can tell you when somebody comes in and wants you to change something, it's like telling you your kid's ugly. You know, it's not easy. And so I was empathetic toward it, but I said, look, here's the problem. Many of the people that are going to come to buy a Jabs franchise are going to want to go to and get these financed via the SBA. But the SBA will not finance a single sex concept. They look at it and they say it's discriminatory. So I said, there is a really good business reason to do it. I said, the other thing is that there's a lot of guys that like to box. MMA is really starting to take off. I mean, so why would we want to, you know, like say, don't come in. And even if, look, back then in 2019, I would imagine the male percentage of boutique fitness was probably 10% or less, right? I mean, it wasn't a big number. Evolving today and certainly has evolved in like a metabolic, it's evolved, you know, tremendously. But anyway, so we also wanted to change how it looked. It looked dated to me. It was, how do I say this nicely? It was pink, right? And I was always perplexed by that because I never thought of pink being an empowering color for females. But I will tell you that over the years, it got progressively more pink. And one day I walked into a studio and it looked like somebody just threw up Pepto-Bismol all over the place. It was awful. And I said, we got to change this. And honestly, the co-founders could not get on board with any of the changes. So we ended up having to buy them out and move on down the road with the brand. And that
buy them out because you were too far into it to ditch it?
We said to them, you can take us out or we can take you out. We love the concept, but if you want to continue to keep it how it is today, you can just buy us back out. And at that point, it was not like it was an enormous undertaking for them to buy us out. So it seemed fair, and we would have, you know, we would have done terms or whatever. It wouldn't have mattered. But they were like, no, why don't you just take us out? And so we did. And sounds easy, but it's not. Then you have to reboot your entire staff. You have to find somebody to come in and run the thing. And, you know, yeah. And then you have to figure out what you want to do with it. Right. And that was the other thing.
With metabolic in your portfolio at this point?
Jabs was first. I first started talking to Brandon and Kirk probably April of 19. And I think we closed on our investment, I want to say August of 19, sometime around August of 19.
Do you feel, because I mean, metabolic's now probably like your LeBron.
Right. It right? is.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. If you position Matt, and again, I've had, why am I blanking on his name with Jabs? Fucking this up. Australian, right? Or a New Zealand? Who's the
South guy? African.
South African, that's it. Why am I blanking on his name? Was it an A?
Bert. Bert.
Bert. Sorry, Bert. Yes. God, yeah. Bert, that's it. Had him on the podcast. Good dude. In comparison, like, if you knew what you have now with Matt at the time, would you be like, would you still have kept Jabs?
Yeah, I would have, because I like boutique fitness.
Okay.
And here's where I think Jabs has an advantage over Metabolic. Metabolic's members, and you know this, you've been to enough of them. You're usually looking for an overachiever who probably has played sports at some point in their life. Maybe not at a high level, but they played in high school. They may have played in college. And they understand the importance of strength training, right? That's not everybody out there that's working out. As Brandon likes to say, you know, we as a country do average really, really well. And I think Jabs appeals to a much broader spectrum of people that are interested in fitness. This could be the first time you've ever gotten involved in fitness and you would like the workout. It could be somebody who has used to be in fitness, has become sedentary for some reason, life events, whatever. Now they want to reintroduce themselves to fitness. This works. You could actually be somebody who is very much in shape and conditioning regularly and enjoy it. So we could go to a market like Ridley Park, Pennsylvania, which nobody knows where Ridley Park, population 7,000 people, and we can open a Jabs there and be successful. We can't do that with a Metabolic.
Yeah, similar, like, you know, Planet Fitness is such a beaut. It's such a gem of a model because you grab those tier one, low tier two markets that no one's ever heard about, and you can do well in there. Let me ask you this, because you obviously have these different concepts, different franchise ors, opening up a Jabs in a market where a Metabolic is. Is there any kind of rules and like that you have there? Or, I mean, I don't
know. I mean,
it's all competition, but.
Yeah, no, there isn't. Although I do think we just opened up two Jabs in San Antonio. One is it's called Fiesta Trails. I'm trying to think where the other one is. And then we just opened up one in Austin, and we've got two Mads in Austin, right?
Yeah.
And look, the competition's competition, right? If it's not a Jabs, it's going to be a Mayweather, right? So, we don't look at them that way. We run those businesses independently of one another, and we're getting ready. Well, I shouldn't say that. We're getting ready to sign a lease in Atlanta. It's a suburb of Atlanta for Jabs now, and so. And we just opened up an Alpharetta in with Metabolic, and obviously we have one on the line down in downtown Atlanta. But so anyway, yeah, no, it's fine, and we're not fighting for the same consumer. I promise you.
Sure. No, yeah, it's a definitely consumer. Can I ask what happened? I wanted to ask you this. I'm having some tenant issues with the brewery in my building. What happened to Scotty's Brew House?
Oh, yeah. So, sure. So, Scotty's was an interesting one. Now, I will tell you, it predated me. And so it was an investment that was made with a big restaurant group, and I forget the name, the technical name of the group, but I think it was Kevin Blackwell, and he had owned at one point, I want to say there were thousands of franchise restaurant brands that he owned. And I think the big one was there was an ice cream one. I'm trying to think of Cold Stone. That was his as well. He had sold that off to a private equity group. Anyway, he came back in. They bought Scotty's, and Z Growth went and made an investment in Scotty's. It was an interesting thing because it wasn't a franchise. As I recall, it was some weird scenario whereby you'd put people in, but it wasn't technically a franchise. It may have been more like a license agreement. Anyway, as I said, predated me, but I will tell you that from what I heard, there were a number of them around the country. They did well, but Scotty's itself wasn't doing well, and they ended up filing bankruptcy. And that would have probably been, geez, just as I was arriving, I want to say 2018, probably late 18, maybe early 19. So I don't recall a ton about it, but from everything I heard, it's kind of a cool place to go and hang out and have a burger and a beer, but I don't know much about it, really.
Interesting. Yeah, that was one. I remember when, when your name first populated in the news press releases with Metabolic and all that. And I remember looking up, and I remember there being the brewery or brew house kind of concept type scenario. So I was just curious on that. Let's okay, so when it comes to this, I know this is such a loaded question, but what is the Rick back of the napkin math when you're considering a franchise? And I know it's market fit, you got to align with the founders, you got to actually like the product, all this. But what is like the just from a pure numbers standpoint, what does that look like for you? What are you really looking at?
The thing we focus most on are single unit economics, because that's what a franchise owner potentially can do with the business, right? And I also look at startup cost as well, because there are sweet spots for all of this. And when we look at concepts, we like to look at concepts that have a payback period of 36 months or less. So if you go in and you do what you're supposed to do, you can recoup your money in about 3 years. And so that's important to us. Coming from my prior franchise concept, where I used to tell people it was the ultimate get rich slow scheme, it took a long time in that business to build out and get to cash flow positive. And it was also a very heavy lift, north of $1 million. And so, your pool of potential owners was much smaller than, let's just say, boutique fitness, whereas you can probably get into a Jabs for 250,000, three, maybe three, Metabolic, 400,000. So you're looking, you've opened up your pool of potential owners. So those are the things we look at. I mean, look, obviously we want to be in the right industry. We want the concept to have some point of differentiation. We want to have founders or co-founders in this case, and in Jabs, that we felt like we could work with, and get along with, and that's really important. But what do we look at? We look at how the single unit economics. We normally don't look at how the existing franchise locations are doing, because typically what we find is that if you get involved in very early stages, which we do, most of the time the founding franchisees aren't doing very well. They're struggling, they're unhappy. And that is really because the franchisor doesn't really know what they should be delivering. I mean, they could tell you everything about that operating business because they built it, But franchising is a whole world unto itself. It's a completely different business. And so they usually struggle. Now, I tell people all the time, the thing that blew me away about Matabolic was every one of their owners were happy and they were all doing well. And now there were levels of success, but none of them were struggling. And that told me that what was happening on the gym floor was resonating with the consumer. And so if you have a product or service that resonates with the consumer, the rest is easy, right? It's just, you know, fixing the things that are missing, putting them in the place. But that was really very, very unique. Whereas if I went to the Jabs, all of the legacy Jabs, they bought into something very different. They paid $100,000 to get their gyms open. They wanted to be part of this Jabs community. They bought themselves shops. They would make, you know, $30,000-$35,000 a year. And somebody like you might look at that and go, well, you know, I spend more than that in my Amex every month. But the reality is if you think about return on your invested capital, that's not hateful, right? They've got their money back, but they were never going to be the owners that we wanted going forward, who were going to open up 3, 4, 5 locations in a marketplace and really own that marketplace. They were happy having their one location in this town. And so that's a lot of times it's what you see. I explain it this way. As you mature and you add franchise locations, you earn the right to get better franchisees, if you will. And you'll see that evolution will happen. That once you start doing that for a bit, the next stage are your big boys that want to come in and start consolidating your, you know, territories. I'm going to buy out everybody in the state of Texas. I'm going to buy everybody out in the state of North Carolina or up and down the East Coast. And so the concepts aren't there yet. Matt's not there yet. They're still a few years away from that. But that is the ultimate evolution. And that's why you see so many private equity companies come in and they say, oh, I own, 250 Orange Theories and 100 of, Restore franchises or whatever.
For a firm like yours, is it best to hold on to these units at cash flowing, or is there certain, like, well, our model, our financial model, it kind of works best if we're exiting these units, or we're exiting a concept at a certain point? Because, I mean, again, everything, you know, on a long enough timeline, every business hits decline. I mean, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, look, I think so our fund basically says that there's a period of time and then we'll start to look for liquidity events. Now, you could have a concept that's not ready for a liquidity event, but you could still wind down the fund. And let's just say, you know, Daily Jam was not ready for a liquidity event, or we liked how it was going and we liked the cash flow. Then I could say to you, Stu, you no longer own shares in this fund, but here are your direct shares ownership in Daily Jam, right? So there's that opportunity. But we feel like if we're going to be the true incubators that we wanted to be, the reason we were here is because lots of private equity, they do not want to touch concepts until they have 100 open units, or they have a certain EBITDA margin, or a certain revenue number. And so our idea was, let's get them to that, and then we can exit. It doesn't mean a Brandon or a Kirk would need to exit. It just means that we could exit from those. So we haven't exited yet. Obviously, we're not in a situation to exit yet. But I think in the next 2 years, you'll likely see us exit from something.
What is, when you come in, so you have that conversation with Kirk and Brandon, you were a member at the Matabolic in DC, correct?
No, I actually wasn't. I didn't even know Matabolic existed until someone mentioned it to me before I called the guys, and I went and I did my first workout in Arlington, Virginia at Corbin Jennings' location. And so, look, I mean, I'm a city guy. I live in the city. If I can't walk there, it's not happening, right? So it wasn't until he opened up at DuPont Circle in 2022, I guess it would have been January of 2022, that I actually joined Metabolic. And that's where I work out now. But so, you know, that was really, you know, how I got involved in the workout. But we went in and when I looked at what it, Metabolic, and I went there and I did the workouts, I walked away from the workout and I said to myself, I totally get it. To me, here's how I describe Metabolic. Metabolic was like me training for high school athletics with better equipment and better coaches. That's what it felt like to me, right? And it was a momentum day. And, if you know, Metabolic's momentum days are, you know, it's a gradual build in intensity. The focus is on like athleticism and endurance. And you're supposed to pace yourself from a 70% to an 80 to a 90. And of course, I was like every other bonehead that, you know, starts out and, you know, you start out at 100 and the second round you're at 110 and the third round you're just dead. So, but I was smart enough to understand what they were trying to accomplish. And so our idea was with Brandon Kirk is like, we love your concept. We just want to help you guys achieve what you want to achieve. And maybe there's some mutual ground here for us to do that. We don't want you to go anywhere. We're not interested in buying you out. We want you to take a look at whether we can get you from, you know, point A to point B faster and more cost effective than you guys doing it on your own.
And again, as much as you can or want to, but what does that look like? I mean, are you guys coming? I mean, how much equity is that worth to you, or is it all on future sales of franchises? Like you guys,
we capitalized the business. We put money into the business and took a controlling stake in the business. But Brandon and Kirk are obviously the keys to this business. They're the brains, the faces, you know, they're everything, you know, these guys. And so when that exit eventually happens, they're going to do okay for themselves.
Sure.
You know, they're going to be happy. And Kirk's going to be sitting somewhere in Florida on the beach, and who knows what Cully will be doing, but, you know.
I had a call today. It's the timing of you, this conversation with you is, you know, once the franchise, whatever, you look at everything, we're like, we're not there, buddy. We're not, I wouldn't even do an introduction with anyone or recommend you fuck with anything or talk to anyone about it. You're just going to embarrass yourself. Let's focus on this. I do reference 11 franchises in 10 states over the course of about a decade for MAD. And I always reference the dedication to the slow climb, the patience of doing it that way and not taking out debt and not rushing early because I got two locations and I'm killing it. And what for you, I mean, are those numbers by your standards of looking at franchises, having 11 homegrown franchise units in that period of time? What did that impress you? Did that were you like, oh shit, that took too long? Like, what were your thoughts when you first saw that?
So my thoughts were, so in franchising, if you're new to it as a concept and your concept's halfway decent, you're going to sell 10 franchises accidentally. You just will. But then it gets really hard, Stu, because you've sold to all the people you've bumped into in the hallways or who know you. And if you think about how some of these franchisees got started, you know, Corbin's now fiance lived in Charlotte and worked
your
out
friends
here
and family around when you raise.
It is. It's exactly like that. So the number didn't surprise me in any way, shape, or form. What surprised me was the success they were having. It is, I have never seen it before and I may never see it again. Because I will tell you, every other concept we looked at, you know, look at the newbies are struggling. It's hard. And it wouldn't have been because the franchisor didn't care. They just don't know, what do I deliver? Most successful entrepreneurs, you know, how did they get there? I think you're going to likely hear a lot of hard work. And I think that's true, right? Business is hard. You got to bust your butt. You owned your own gym, and you understand that. But the documentation of exactly how to be successful usually doesn't exist. Well, I think we did some of this, we did some of that, we worked really hard. And of course, times change too, right? You know, and today, you know, 10 years ago, or, you know, if you were going into digital marketing as a means to grow, a lot easier, less competitive than it is today, right? Today's a tough world out there. So things change and evolve. But I tell the prospective franchisees, you need to have the money, you need to have the capital, you need to bust your ass, and you need to follow the plan. And if you deviate in any one of those three, all bets are off. And it's weird, right? Because people say to me, well, why wouldn't I do that? Why wouldn't I follow the plan? That's why I'm buying a franchise. And I'd say, that's a really good question. But guess what? People deviate. They don't listen. And it's their business. So if you said to me, Rick, I'm going to open up a Metabolic here in Charlotte, and, you know, I want you to meet, you know, Joe. Joe's my GM candidate. And I say to you, Stu, Joe's a really nice guy, but he's like 52 years old and he doesn't really profile like our membership base. You know, I don't think that would be the best hire for you. You probably should look for somebody maybe 25, 30, 35, you know, in that range. You know, Joe's married, he's got three kids and his life is very different. Guess what? You can still hire him. It's your business. I can't tell you can't, right? But that's not the plan. So I tell people all the time, there's a plan. It's the same as if you bring a trainer to training camp that moves wonderfully, but they don't have a freaking personality, right?
This goes to a question that'll be interesting to answer it. I think the reason that happens, and I have these conversations, is because there are franchisees who still maybe mistake themselves as entrepreneurs. And I look at there's a difference between the two, a very distinct difference. If you were an entrepreneur, then you make the call and you hire Joe and you do whatever. But when you committed to being a franchisee, you have to take this subservient kind of this acceptance of like, okay, I'm literally doing this and paying for your game plan. But then for me to grab it and within 7 months, I'm like, actually, I think I got a different idea here, which you may, but I promise you it's not something that hasn't been seen, tested and analyzed as good or bad or effective or ineffective. And again, committing to stick with that. So the first question, are franchisees entrepreneurs?
Yes, without a doubt, because they're going out, they're in taking their money and they're starting a business. And whether franchising is just a business strategy at the end of the day, right? You can be, you know, an independent operator. You can be an independent unaffiliated operator. You can be an affiliated operator, right? And that's what you are in franchising. You're independent, though your business, but you're affiliated. You've licensed the rights to something because you believe that it's gonna jumpstart your business and it's gonna put in place all the tools and systems that you don't have to think about. If you go back to the days when you were owned your and operated your gym, I suspect a lot of what you focused on is what was going on today, what was going on next week. Maybe even you were really good, Stu, and you said, what's going on next month, right? It's our job to think about what's happening next year and the year after that, right? So you have somebody that's out there that's thinking about what the future of this business looks like. And if you think about the things that, like, let's just stay on Metabolic for a second. You don't have to think about your workouts, right? They're planned for you and they're freaking good. You don't have to think about your marketing. You don't have to think about your color schemes. You don't have to think about your music. You don't have to think about your technology platforms. All of this stuff is done. Now think about it as an independent individual trying to go out and figure all of this out on your own. It will be costly and it will be timely. So franchising as a business strategy makes a heck of a lot of sense. But you have to be willing to say the greater good of these past and current franchisees know more than I do walking in, and I'm willing to take that. I, I tell every prospective franchisee that comes in, say, look, in business, success leaves clues. Find the people who are successful, emulate or copy what they're doing, and you'll be okay, right? And but to the extent you don't want to do that, you're probably not going to be successful.
And I've said this in, you know, getting together with all the mad people at a conference and all that, and it's not, there's no, it's not meant to put anyone down. My opinion is a great franchisee has something that a great entrepreneur doesn't have. Most great entrepreneurs are not great operators. They're great problem solvers and innovators, yeah. And they see what others don't, and they can grab it. They can mold fog. Let's put it that way. Okay. Franchisees are great at, like, the great ones, again, are, you know, they listen, they stay in the lane. It's more like being on a team sport, which is, you know, I love when you guys have the jerseys, the hockey jerseys for new franchise, like, because right. You are on a team. And whereas an entrepreneur is the head, he's the owner of the team. He is the GM. He's the offensive coordinator, the head coach, all that. A good franchisee, in my opinion, is an operator who knows this is my role. I need to follow the playbook.
Yes.
Coach called the play. I'm going to execute the shit out. And if I do that, I got checks waiting for me, right? It's going to be, yeah. And you know, again, it's kind of gets into a little bit of semantics and things like that. I'm certainly not taking away to the entrepreneurial abilities and all that and the hard work of a franchisee by any means or stretch of the imagination. It's just different skill sets, right? And that one's not better than the other.
Yeah. It's interesting. I remember the first business I started and it was, for 6 months, all I did was lower my revenue projections. I could not figure out what was going wrong. It's funny because there's this book I used to give to the Zippy Shell franchisees called, what was it called?
The E-Myth?
Man, I'm blanking. My book, The
Michael
E-Myth.
Gerber, E-Myth.
Revisited.
Yeah, Michael yeah. Gerber. Yeah, absolutely.
Why most small businesses fail, right? Great book. And I swear, Stu, they followed me around to write that book. I was doing everything wrong.
You were the lady in the bake shop.
Oh, my God. So, and I see this because it's interesting. One of the biggest mistakes that entrepreneurs make is they spend too much time in their business and not enough time working on their business. And those are two very different things. So you may say to yourself, you know what? I know Metabolic's got this requirement that I have to have a professional cleaner come in, but what if I clean and save money? And I know we're supposed to have somebody up at the front desk. What if I do that too? And you think, well, by doing this, I can get the profitability faster, but you don't. You prolong your profitability because you're doing the things that aren't important that for you to be doing. You should be building that business. And the other thing is too, and this is a little bit more gutsy. Most small businesses fail when they're on the verge of success. The entrepreneur doesn't have the wherewithal to push through that last brick wall, and that's tough because, you know, look, yeah, I don't know that everybody's a first time entrepreneur, right? They just are. When they start their own business, they're the first time entrepreneur. But it's challenging because for some people, the disconnect is, I don't mind working. I work hard. I'm at my office 60 hours a week. Yeah, but are you working 60 hours a week or are you at your office 60 hours? That's different, right? Those are different things. And there's no safety nets when you're running your own business. You are it. You are the safety net. You just got to hump it. And we try to communicate that with people. I think it's so important for people to understand, like, business is hard work. Metabolic is not an easy business. It's not complicated by any stretch of the imagination. I can break it down to having to do two things really, really well. But it's not easy. And I don't know that there is an easy business. And if you find one, please call me, DM me, whatever, text me. Just let me know because I've never seen an easy business.
No, I agree. And I, It's a, you know, Gerber's a, that's a great example. And it, you know, I was looking over my bookshelf. I still have my original one from 2007 or eight, somewhere around there. And I, you know, dog-eared the pages and I got my notes and highlighted. And he's got the point in there about the entrepreneurial seizure, the moment when you have the moment. And I remember highlighting that and I knew exactly where I was and when I knew I wanted to own my own gym and all that. It's such a powerful book. What would you, and we'll wrap with this, but I want to ask you that, what would you say to somebody who is not an inspiring franchisee, but somebody who believes that they have something that is worth franchising and is an aspiring franchisor? What are the, hey, check this, check these boxes first before you go looking to go that route.
So the biggest thing, and believe me, like I'm one of those people that I will help anybody. Like, they don't have to pay me. I can't tell you the number of people that I have consulted with because I just feel like it's the right thing to do, right? But I tell them always the same thing. You have to prove concept. You have to. And proving concept isn't one location in one town. Now, you don't have to be across the country, but you do have to have multiple locations. And you have to be able to look at those single unit economics where I can stare at you in the face and say, this works. Like,
Tell
I
me,
know it works. It's what
what is a good proof of
you,
concept?
it could be as little as three, Stu. I mean, honestly, it could be as little as three, but you have to be able to prove out the single unit economics. And if you are able to do that, then you have something because you're not going to be successful in three locations unless the product or service that you're providing has some traction, right? It resonates with a consumer. And sometimes you can do okay with one, and when you open up number two, it becomes a challenge, and number three doesn't seem to work right. And then you learn a lot from that. Man, are we in the wrong town? Are we in the wrong part of town? I mean, some concepts are very location driven. You know this, you're in the commercial world. Some concepts you have to be in the corner of Weston, Maine, right? Some you don't. And it just depends on what that concept is. But if you're not, if you don't have the ability to articulate that to a prospective franchisee because you don't have enough, you know, successes and or failures, it's not going to be effective. People want to rush it a little bit. I opened up this thing, it's doing really, really well. And by the way, there are, I'll call them predators in our industry, who will call you up. My brother has a business. It's a like a home remodeling business, right? And he does very, very well. And he gets solicited by people who say, we can franchise this concept. And he calls me up and says,
Oh, yeah.
these guys say they can franchise. And I'm like, you're not franchising it. Stop. It is what they mean is they'll get you an FDD, right? And they'll throw your concept out on all these, you know, websites for franchise brokers or franchise, you know, people interested in franchises. But that does not make a successful business. You have to be able to prove it out in multiple locations and be able to know that the dog hunts, so to speak.
I mean, so I run into these. I run into single going in, or maybe multi, maybe two units. And it's like what I'd refer to as like a runaway success, right? Like, you know, 6, 7 years later, they turn around, they've got two locations, they're spinning off, you know, 94 a month at a 24% margin, something just really impressive. Like, holy shit. But then you add, you know, you pop the hood to the car. Like, I'm like, oh man, this is a good looking vehicle. I pop the hood and I look at it, I'm like, there's fucking nothing in here. How did you do this? Right? Like, you couldn't repeat, you know, it's you know, I joke like the double unders, people who like can do a double under jump twice with that rope and they get it accidentally, and like, oh my God, I got it. It's like, do it again. Like, I don't know. I don't know how I did it. Is it more important that their single unit economics are good, even if they like, honestly, I don't have the system. I don't know how we've done this, to be honest with you. I think we got lucky. I didn't build it on systems. And then is that like, that's fine. As long as you're pro as long as you're successful, I can bring the systems in.
I think that's true. And if I, you know, and look at the concepts we're involved in, none of them had great systems when we walked in the door. And none of them could articulate exactly how they did things. And that's what I'm telling you. That is typically the problem. So imagine that person that has those two units, and now they just go, I'm going to franchise this. And they walk out. They know nothing about franchising. This is where they fall flat on their face, or their early entrance into the franchise world, their franchisees, the pioneers, so to speak, fall flat on their face because you're right. They haven't documented anything. They can't articulate. There are no systems in place. And it's very different because your franchisees are not you, right? I mean, they are not you. They're going to come from all walks of life. They're going to have different passions, different convictions, different temperaments and talents. And you've got to be able to build a system. One of the funniest things I remember talking to Brandon about during due diligence was he said that they would only sell a franchise to like a former athlete or D1, D2 athlete. And I said, dude, man, we're going to be building this thing for 100 years. We have to build a franchise so that Mr. or Mrs. Jones can walk in and be successful. And, you know, that takes a lot of hard work because that means Mr. and Mrs. Jones they're not the operating owners, right? They're the owners, but they're not the operator. They've got to find the right people. And that's why, you know, like any business, Stu, your team is going to make or break you. If you've got a great team, you're going to be successful. So how do we ensure that people get a great team? Because you don't put the signs up and sit back and watch people walk in the door. It just doesn't. That's a fantasy, you know. Maybe a Chick-fil-A that happens,
right?
Yeah, this doesn't work like that. It's hard work, and people can embrace that, accept that, and look. The difference is when you're building it for yourself, it should feel different to you than working in a corporate environment where you're helping build a business. Nothing wrong with that. I tell people all the time that everybody were an entrepreneur, we wouldn't be able to hire anybody. There'd be nothing to work for us. Everybody'd be out doing their own thing. So, but not everybody has got what it takes to be successful as an entrepreneur. And so you have to be careful on who you select as your franchise owners. And you also have to be willing to put the right people in place to help you if you don't have the abilities or capabilities that you need.
Well, wait, brother, I have thoroughly enjoyed the time getting to know you, and always feel honored and privileged to call you guys colleagues and to be able to be around the ecosystem of Metabolic and you know what Brandon and Kirk have created. But you guys have been, I think, absolutely incredible. And I always reference, especially in the world of the exponential bullshit going down and the F45
Yeah. Standardization
and all that. I'm like, it's not, trust me, it is done well. It's done ethically. It's done smart. It's not done at lightning fast pace just for purpose of selling units and trying to IPO, blah, 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 all that shit. So hats off to you guys. If anyone who's listening to this wants to reach out, they have a question for you. They want to learn more about Z Growth or what you're looking for and maybe your next concept. How can they best get in touch with you guys?
Yeah, I the easiest is just to email me. It's rdelsantro@zgrowth.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I have an Instagram account. I use it only to watch our businesses, and I come from an era where we had rules about no pictures because nothing good could come from it. So I'm very low key on social media. And by the way, I love that I'm very low key on social media.
Yeah.
So anyway, not a good place to catch me, but look, anybody just wants to talk, I am available to chat and offer advice and willing to do so. And so, but Stu, we appreciate you, man. You're a big supporter of Matt and we like that. I love that you've been at our conferences, and You've done such a great job with every time you've presented, and I know you've done training and at some of our locations for our owners and their staff. And so a mutual respect back at you, buddy.
I appreciate it, brother. I appreciate it. Alrighty, guys. Thank you very much. Rick, thanks, brother.
All right. So take care.